Right, the Cabinet today, quite a lot of pre-budget material now, which obviously I'm not going to brief on, given the big day is 2.5 weeks away. We did take policy decisions today on regulations which are going to be promulgated under the Wine Act, the new legislation that was passed coming into effect in 2004. Had a report from Phil Gough on his visit to the Solomon Islands, and where we go from here. As usual, looked at the energy hydro storage figures, which I see have now moved above the 2001 and 2003 levels for this time of year, and on the cumulative national inflows have actually moved above the 2002 level for this time of year as well. And the South Island lakes are sitting at 75% of stored energy as a percentage of the average. So that's more encouraging news. Coming up this week in the House, we're expecting to progress a number of bills. The paid parental leave for self-employed persons will have its second reading. We're looking to committee stages on the Education Amendment Bill. Second readings on Coroner's Bill, Criminal Procedure Bill, Historic Places Amendment Bill. Of course, Wednesday is the Members' Day, and come Thursday, we're anticipating first readings on the Te Arawa Lakes Settlement Bill, the Treaty Settlement Bill, and on the Law Reform Epidemic Preparedness Bill from Pete Hobson. Coming up this week, in the course of the week, there will be some announcements and speeches in the pre-budget period. Just moving through the week, I'm down at the Grey Power AGM in Nelson tonight myself. And the Minister of Senior Citizens will be there tomorrow night. As you know, Pete Hodgson has given a keynote speech on his health portfolio today. There's a statement forthcoming from Steve Mahari on the future status of Kiwi FM, and I understand Mr. Deinhoven is announcing a sizable condensate-rich gas field discovered in the Taranaki area. We have Trevor Mallard in India this week with a New Zealand-India Airlines agreement to be signed there. Consumer Affairs discussion paper on consumer protection law is out from Judith Tizard tomorrow. Tomorrow also I'll be meeting the new British High Commissioner when he presents his letter of credential to me, which is the practice with the High Commissioners. He is, of course, the son, grandson, two former Governors General to New Zealand. A discussion document out from Clayton Cosgrove on the Unit Titles Act on Wednesday, which I foreshadowed a couple of weeks ago. Thursday, I'll be at the opening of the new Masterton Hospital, a complete rebuild of the Masterton Hospital. Michael Cullen will be doing a pre-budget speech for the Canterbury Chamber of Commerce. Steve Mahari will have budget announcements in education by Thursday and Friday. Crown financial statements are out Friday and Friday night and Saturday. The New Zealand-Australia Leadership Forum will be meeting in Auckland, and I expect to pop into that at some point. Any questions?
Pete Hodgson, in his address today, seemed to indicate that maybe further down the track is going to be some announcement to stop kids from eating certain food at school in terms of fat,
high sugar. I can't recall from my reading of the speech late last night whether he...
No, he said it in answer to a question.
In answer to a question. Well, certainly we've charged ministers with looking at new initiatives to tackle obesity. That was specifically mentioned in my Prime Minister's statement in February. And obviously it's a cause of considerable concern across the country that our children are carrying more weight than is desirable, and that stores up a lot of health problems for the future. It's not a problem unique to New Zealand, it's a problem being experienced across the Western world, I understand, and not just with children, with adults as well. So we are looking for fresh initiatives, but we haven't signed off on any specifics because we want a proper set of options. Well, I haven't looked at the emails, but they seem, to say the least, a little inappropriate. I think it's important for all our state-owned enterprises and Crown agencies and entities to appreciate that the parliamentary and democratic process does require accountability. And people are from time to time asked to come before select committees and account for their expenditure of public money or the way in which they've managed an organisation. That's the way New Zealand works, and it's important that everyone who accepts office at a governance level throughout the state sector and public sector accepts that responsibility to be accountable.
So how could Mr. Boyce have got the view that the select committee was his enemy? Does that mean it wasn't a very good choice for the chairman?
I think Mr. Boyce was coming towards the end of a rather stressful chairmanship. It's not the easiest government entity to be the chair of the board of. It had been in the news rather too often, rather than simply reporting the news. Mr. Boyce's appointment, of course, has just expired, and I'm sure he'll be very happy to be released from responsibility.
Do you know which Australian
I haven't looked at that in detail, but I understand Mr. Downer is coming across, and but there may well be others too. Well, I mean, I'm going to pop in because it's in my home city, probably about 2 miles from where I live, so I'm quite happy to do that. I think for ministers from out of town, particularly the Minister of Finance, who's barely 2 weeks away from delivering the budget, I imagine that he has rather a lot to do drafting speeches and getting on top of all the presentation of that. And I wouldn't question at all Dr. Cullen's prioritisation of his time this coming weekend.
I asked you last week about the crisis in the energy sector, whether it was over or not, and you indicated today that things are looking brighter. Are you
brighter each week? Brighter each week.
You're not prepared to draw a line under it to say that the crisis is past?
Well, you look at the graphs, as one does every week. I mean, New Zealand weekly inflows, that yellow perpendicular line was the weekly inflows up to Friday. So you can see it's on a very, very sharp trajectory. And that's encouraging. But I always repeat that it's helpful if people are efficient in the way they use power, both in our businesses and in our homes.
Have you discussed yet, what's the latest briefing on Solomons and will New Zealand be giving aid to help rebuild commercial centres?
Well, firstly, as I said last week, we've been dealing with three levels of crisis. One, the law and order crisis, second, the political crisis, and then the economic crisis. The economic crisis can't effectively begin to be addressed until the new government has its feet under the table and is in a position to engage with the donor community. And I'm told that the economic damage from the virtual razing of Chinatown is quite substantial. In terms of law and order, it appears to be immensely better since the first Prime Minister elected by the Parliament stood down. And one hopes that the election later this week will go smoothly. All going smoothly, those who sent extra forces across, of course, would expect to draw them down. And I understand the Fiji police may already have gone, and certainly we're actively looking at which point we would draw down. After the new government has its feet under the table, that will be the time for New Zealand aid, Aus aid, European Union, others engaged in supporting the Solomons to start to look at some of those economic issues. And obviously what's happened has made the economic situation of the Solomons a good deal worse.
Regarding David Parker, I take it it's safe to assume that he'll be back in Cabinet after tomorrow's caucus meeting?
One, of course, wouldn't want to prejudge what one's colleagues did, but I have every reason to believe that there will be very strong support for him in turn.
And of his roles, is it likely that he will assume the three portfolios of energy, transport and climate change?
I'll make an announcement about that tomorrow, but I'm not going to prejudge a decision for caucus. I would expect to have something to say to you reasonably soon after the beginning of the caucus.
Are you able to run us through that process again? What
Under the Labor Party caucus rules, a Labor Prime Minister, in this case me, cannot appoint to the Cabinet. Under the Labor Party rules, the caucus always elects members of the Cabinet. Not members of the Ministry outside, but members of the Ministry inside the Cabinet. In the normal course of events, that's done through an election by exhaustive ballot after the general election when Labor goes into government. In the case of an extraordinary vacancy, or one or more extraordinary vacancies, then the caucus rules specify that the Prime Minister of the day, in this case me, will make a nomination to the caucus.
Can somebody else nominate somebody else if they want to do a contest?
No, they would have to vote it down, is my recollection, but I'd have to check the rules.
I was just going back to Solomon's. What's your reaction to requests from some of Solomon's leaders that Ramsay's mandate be reviewed, in fact, altered somewhat, change of focus of Ramsay?
Ramsay had three key objectives, and the objectives that are relevant to the three levels of crisis that I just spoke about. It went in to help stabilise law and order. It went in to do that so that you could provide a context for development, which of course covers economic and social development. And it went in with a view longer term to supporting the development of better governance in the Solomons. Now, all those objectives remain relevant. But given that the mission went in under the previous government of Sir Alan Kamkhaza, I'm sure that Ramsay itself will want to sit down with the new government and look for strong assurances of support for the regional mission. And that's then an opportunity to talk about the objectives of the mission again. I'd be surprised, frankly, if they changed very much, because there are obviously still three key areas of need.
Are you sick of people blaming Ramsay for the destruction there?
I made the point on media interviews this morning that it's a bit rich to blame Ramsay for the criminal activities of people who looted, ransacked and burnt down the commercial centre of the town. I think that's ridiculous.
You had discussions with several leaders in Syria last week. Do they reflect your view that it's time for Ramsay to be looked at again?
Well, firstly, the weekend before this last one, I did get on the phone and spoke to 13 of the 15 other heads of government in the forum. And all of them were very pleased to be rung, and all of them expressed strong support for the regional mission. And the common view would have been that the Pacific Island Forum has invested a lot of political capital in the Solomon Islands and wants to see support for the Solomons through to it greatly improving on where it is now. So the idea is afloat of the forum itself sending a high-level political mission, and that I'm sure will happen in due course. Meantime, the general view seemed to be let's see what government settles out of all this, and then it'll be the time to engage with that government on the road ahead.
In the light of Gerard Brown's speech at the weekend, is it time for Labour to again look at the constitutional issues raised by the UN Special Rapporteur in light of the rising influence of the Maritime?
No, I'm left utterly confused by Nationalist policy on Maori issues after the weekend's events. Mr. Brownlee floated that anything was possible in their desperation to try and form government. He appeared to be saying by morning radio this morning that the policy was still to abolish the Maori seats, that if they needed to trade that off to form a government, that could be done, no doubt anything else could be as well. Dr. Brasher, however, was taking a rather purer line. I thought the only person who came out of this with any credibility was John Key, who said up front to a television camera that it was the anti-Maori stance that had given Dr. Brash and the party its lift, so one assumes they won't be too quick about dropping it.
But taking Mr. Brown's point that the Maori Party could be more influential, in fact could be pivotal to who forms the government, doesn't Labor have to make some moves to offer on the branches? You first came off the rank and seem to do the trick. Last came off the rank.
Well, the fact is we're in government today with working arrangements with a range of parties, and I think the way the New Zealand political system is split among a range of parties now, it's not really credible to say that any one minor party is the pivotal player. All of them are pivotal in one sense or another.
But you don't see any need to offer another branch towards the Māori Party?
Well, we do liaise with the Māori Party. There is liaison at ministerial level, at my level, at chief of staff level, members of select committees talking. There is liaison. It's not a formal working relationship, but certainly there are issues on which we have valued Māori Party support in Parliament, and I'm sure will in the future. We've kept those lines of communication, I think.